we live in strange times. With war afoot in the Ukraine, it sounds pretty silly to record a podcast about financial markets. And, well, it is. But we did it anyway, if only to distract ourselves and try to make sense of how it all connects to the myopic concerns of Western financial markets. Here we go! As ever, the usual caveat, we're not financial professionals. This is not investment advice. We know not what we do. Please don't listen to us, but please do enjoy this episode of Degenerate Business School.
So here's what I took a step back, James. I thought about it. First principles, financial markets are hard. That is true. It's the truest thing you've ever said. But in that vein, I learned this week that in the market regime we're in the West, with Daddy Jerry pulling the strings, right? All that matters is what the Fed is going to do, how big the balance sheet is, where are interest rates, are we in the tightening part of the cycle or not? Because it appears that unless there's a nuclear war that destroys humanity, that's all markets actually care about, vis-a-vis when Putin actually invaded the Ukraine. We want risk off and then immediately risk on because, give me honest here. The story is, well, if there's a geopolitical uncertainty or crisis, the Fed's less likely to do 7 rate hikes this year and has to be more dovish. Is that where we are?
That's part of it. I think a lot of it's Europe. You definitely can't raise rates, and you can't get, ECB can't get too aggressive. So it's definitely that. And then on the Fed side, I think maybe 50 basis points is off the table for March. I think now everyone's saying 25 because you just don't want to freak people out, because there's always, everyone's on edge already. So there's that. And then I had another theory too. And it's that I think the markets look at what's happening and realize, wow, you know what? Europe and the US aren't going to do shit. They're just going to sit back and do some sanctions. I mean, Biden even sanctioned energy, which is like, what are you doing? That's like the whole cash cow. Because he's too afraid of inflation and of getting trounced in the elections. And so I think, so Putin's calculation is actually in some ways correct, right? That the West is going to do very limited action. And so they might just waltz all over Ukraine. They're going to march right into Kiev. It might take them a little longer because those Ukrainians fight pretty hard. But at the end of the day, it's going to be really, I think the market thinks it's going to be a contained conflict and it's just going to spread there. And then that's what they might be pricing it. So I think that's why you're seeing some of this kind of bounce back.
I think you just blew it wide open. I think you did it. So Vlad, he's sitting in Moscow over the last several years. He's kind of been on a territorial nibble strategy since 2008. Starts with Georgia. Okay, no one's going to defend the Georgians because most Americans obviously don't know it's a country as well as a state, obviously. That was just smart on you, Vladdy. Then we get portions of Ukraine in the Obama administration in 2014. So he's kind of like systematically testing the perimeter. We know he wants the Ukraine a territorial buffer. It's a cultural predecessor to Russian civilization, yada, yada, yada. But you think the thing that actually gave Putin the green light is that the United States is so completely fucked in its battle for inflation and energy prices. It's, as Jimmy Bianco said, inflation is the number one concern right now among U.S. households. Plus, by the way, the Germans get all of their natural gas from the Russians. So we could never get the Germans to sanction Russian energy, right? So he's like, yeah, I got this. No one's going to get in my way. So it was kind of just like the time was now. He had a perfect opportunity.
Yeah, I think all these things kind of came together.
Okay. Robert, you buying it?
Yes, but mostly because...
I don't mean stocks. I mean the narrative.
No. I do because, I mean, who didn't see this coming, right? The sanctions were announced well before the invasion as though that was going to do something. Mm-hmm. So it's not like Vladdy couldn't see this coming from a mile away. I mean, we all saw this coming from a mile away, right? Mm-hmm. So, the interesting part is that Ukrainians are actually fighting back. But as far as the markets are concerned, I mean, I'm not necessarily on the idea that because of that conflict that the Fed needs to be more dovish. I don't think that we're ever actually going to be as hawkish as some on the street have been projecting. This idea of, to me, 50 basis points was not on the table. The idea of 7 or 8 hikes was absolutely ludicrous. I've told you a couple of times, originally at the beginning of the year, the line was at 3.5. I was still taking the under on that, and nothing's changed. But again, it is possible that this is the off ramp that Jerry needs to say, okay, maybe we should slow down. But at the end of the day, this isn't solving inflation.
Well, yeah, and as a practical matter, James, you are the person who understands nation states. What does Ukraine have? They export a lot of wheat, so we could have made a wheat play. Missed that one. I don't even know if that's possible for us. Just kidding.
Tough one for like wheat futures. Not really anything invested.
Apparently, sunflower oil. Is using cooking and not the U.S. Ukraine exports a lot of that, and then energy, right? But energy has been in this overextended run up, fossil fuels. And so actually, this week it's still kind of in this. It's reached a top and it's been a little bit sideways. I just mean globally, this is what Russia and Ukraine provide for the world. Russia, fossil fuels, and Ukraine, commodities. So it's not like it's a financial center. I would say this, though, that it is a war involving a nuclear power. Russia has half the nuclear weapons in the world. So there is a massive tail risk in that it's a war, and wars have unforeseen and unpredictable consequences. To put a fine point on it, not that this is a foreign policy podcast.
Just that uncertainty. But what it looks like is that Europe is not going to do really any military support. U.S. isn't. It's not even like, I don't think it's even supported in here, like when they do the surveys. So what's going to happen is usually these conflicts, the quick end of the conflict is like one power just kind of overwhelming the other power. Mm-hmm. That's just what's going to happen. So then markets are okay with that. And they're like, all right, well, we kind of know what's going to happen now. And they, I guess, are maybe pricing in that maybe it gets contained to Ukraine. We'll see if he starts invading Poland or Finland or something like that. So,
yeah, well, I feel like even though Vladdy's taking his shot, it's going to be a quagmire, right?
Yeah, just with the Ukrainians. I mean, it's going to be like 300, that the movie.
But I just mean, United States superficially, knocked Iraq, the government in Iraq out in a couple weeks. Mm-hmm. But it was a quagmire. Like it's hard to occupy another country.
True. Yeah.
All right. But you know what, Robert? Here it is. Here's the lesson for us though. What did Carter teach us? It don't matter what the headlines are. What do the charts say? So if you look at the S&P, if I look at the S&P, but I'm going to ask you, I don't think anything's changed. I still think there's more pain coming. Like we are in the midst of a correction. technically the S&P was up this week, but we hit a lower low. We're still in the middle of a technical breakdown. What do you say if you just look at the charts?
I agree. I think this is going lower. And I mean, the chart itself still says this is going lower because, I mean, once you broke down from, what was this, the 150, you're still well below that. There's been a couple of instances where you bounce up to, what is this?
The 200-day moving average.
No, you bounce up to the 20.
Oh, the 20. Yeah, no, we haven't come close to the 200. Sorry.
And then you fall back down.
Right.
So, I mean, that's basically where we are. One of the things that's generally known is some of the biggest bounces occur in the midst of bear markets.
Yeah.
So it's easy to look at these last couple of days and think, okay, we're in the clear. But it is possible that we've had such a strong collapse that you're simply seeing some short covering before you go back into it. So I'm still positioned short. And the longs that I do have, I have aggressively sold calls against. I'm still of the belief that this is going lower.
And back, so there's technical breakdown, and back to what Jimmy Bianco has been talking about, which I think he's right. Robert, what you said about ain't no way the Fed's going to actually tighten as much as they're saying or the consensus is saying. He made the point that actually, like, fund managers basically are still not pricing in 7 hikes this year, or like a more aggressive QT. That actually the only part of the market that's actually priced it in is the bond market. Like, the credit market has priced it in completely. So that yields are at 2% on the 10-year. But that the equity, the people who control the equity market are still actually like only pricing in less than 7 rate hikes. So if the Fed follows through, there's only downside to the market, leaving aside the technical pattern. I think you're right about that.
Yeah, it's similar to what's happening in the stock market, where you can ask anyone and everyone and they'll all tell you that they're bearish, but they're not positioned that way. So it's easy to tell a narrative, but where the actual money goes, it's a different story, which sort of goes back to Carter's point, which is at the end of the day, all you have is charts, right? The narrative. Mm-hmm. The narrative is a story we tell ourselves to sleep at night, but you know, where your money lies, like that's the real story. So I'm still of the belief that this is going lower, and I'm still of the belief that we don't get anywhere close to 7 hikes. To me, that's absolutely ridiculous.
So James,
not because we shouldn't, but because Jerry doesn't want to. Jerry's looking for the off ramp, and maybe it's Ukraine, but he's looking for an off-ramp.
Mm-hmm. Well, so James, we stay the course, like you said, with our SPXS position. Once we break the 4,000 barrier, we stay disciplined, we get out, we don't get greedy. Even though I want to, after I saw Carter say he thinks it's going to 3,500. Actually, he said... He published that one picture that looked like it was 3,500, but he's actually saying it's 3,700, which would be a little bit more than 20%. So, you know, when we actually break through 4,000, who knows what I'm going to do, because I'm an idiot. But here's the real question. I asked you this week about staking Ethereum. I don't really know what it means. Probably a great way to lose your money. Maybe not. The real question is, okay, if S&P breaks through 4,000, that just means like the NASDAQ will be getting further slaughtered. All of crypto will have more downside pressure. But we're brainstorming here. When we decide we're going to buy more, how are we going to allocate what we're buying between asset classes and sectors? What's your thinking there? Directionally, or spitball?
Yeah, I mean, it's wherever you're into. I mean, obviously, you know, we were misallocated, at least the general portfolio into like ultra growth stuff. You know, it could be something balanced, right? It could be like, you know, mega cap FANG and, you know, partially, which, you know, safe, right? To ride out the volatility at least. And then, yeah. And then some, you know, which is like Bitcoin ETH, you know, kind of like next gen, mm-hmm. similar to mega cap, you know, it's still a big asset class. And so, you can do that. And then, and then guys going one step ahead, maybe doing like yield farming or staking, to just get your interest.
I think I'm going to buy more ETH and I'm going to stake it.
You can do your own 32 ETH yourself.
I think you can. I haven't tried it yet. I think you can stake it on Coinbase without a minimum.
Yeah, it'd be like a pool.
Yeah, I think you get 4.5% or something. Mm-hmm. And by 4.5%, I mean you get a lollipop non-FDIC insured theoretical amount of boner money that will probably evaporate into thin air at some point.
I mean, the idea
for another day.
I understand that as an investment, 4.5% is not the worst, but the idea of getting that in crypto is insulting. It just, what is that, a 30-minute move?
But it's 4.5% in ETH tokens. So really, it's a quadrillion percent when you project it forward, obviously. Well, okay. Obviously, my head is FANG, NASDAQ 100. So it will get punished the most. I'll be looking at Kathy when the ARK Innovation Fund retraces completely to $40. Obviously, crypto, Bitcoin, ETH, and collection of boner coins. Here's the several thousand dollar question, though, James. Emerging markets. Is this actually the time? We're talking about buy and hold, just because even if we see a 20% correction, the American stock market will still be the most expensive stock market in the history of stock markets.
Yeah, I mean, I think we had to now differentiate emerging markets. Like, it's like, you know, China tech was so overweighted and that was bringing everybody else down.
Right.
Or you have, you know, like emerging market, like, you know, energy materials, which is like a totally different sector, which mm-hmm. so, you know, looking at it from that lens, like, you might want to be diversify. Definitely China tech, though. Actually, that's getting a bid now too, because it's gotten slaughtered, right?
Yeah.
So you do have to be selective and then make bid into like not kind of the stuff that everyone was buying before that was kind of propping it up, like Taiwan Semi or, you know, Baba or something like that, and actually kind of go into kind of the smaller energy materials plays. You want to really kind of get that exposure.
Well, yeah, perversely, I don't feel comfortable. I mean, I do, because I have, obviously. But like at this point, and this is probably a bad sign, and this is the thing that I will say, that when we look back on it, I'm sleeping on Robert's couch, we'll be like, yep, that was the moment. But I feel more comfortable putting money into crypto than I do US equity market, just because the US equity market, like, how much is my risk adjusted return really going to be over the next 10 years given the run up we've already had and the geopolitical uncertainty in the US versus crypto? At least I have the call option on network effects, even if I'm wrong about the tokens and it doesn't work out and I choose the wrong one or have the wrong basket or the wrong weighting. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, it'd be interesting to see if they can hold those July lows, because you know, if we have another crypto winter, you know, that's when it breaks those lows, right? And
then, yeah.
And then who knows what the bottom is there, right?
But you know what rich people do? That's when they buy. Whenever.
Yeah, and then I guess you have to, like, sleep. Yeah. Even if it does hit those July lows, you can't put your whole stack in there. You got to kind of nibble at it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But Robert, what are you going to do? You're like, this is my time to buy the long-dated call option on Ford and GM.
Yeah. Maybe not exactly Ford and GM, but my long-dated calls are, they've paid off best when I play Dow stocks, industrials, shit that your grandparents used to own. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Industrials is the way to go.
That's fair.
Obviously I do still throw, you know, the occasional flyer on Kathy stuff just because it's like short dated and I'm betting on a quick pop. But as far as the bulk of my investment, long dated calls. And for the most part, you get the best bang for your buck on Dow components.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll probably, James, I'll probably hang on. I'll just hang on to the what little XLE I have just for fun for the next 10 years, see what happens. Maybe oil will get to $400 a barrel. We don't know. It'll be like Mad Max Fury Road. Future is uncertain.
The last hurrah. So, you know, the July 08 high might be in play. You got 40 more dollars to go.
Inflation adjusted, that's $220.
It's true.
But Eric Townsend said, all right, dogs. Stay strong.